humanoid type figure. This figure communicated with him but did not move his lips. This person we later learned was a man named Dr. Cold or Mr. Cold. And there followed from that a trip to a planet beyond our solar system. And the man who had that experience is with us this morning, and he is Woody Derenberger, and he is also a man who has put together a book on this with the help of Harold Hubbard, and it's good to have both of you here. We'd like now, Woody, to have you just tell us this story from really the beginning. Where did it start, and what were you doing there, and then what happened?
Well, it was in right outside of Parkersburg, West Virginia. I was, as you say, a sewing machine salesman, and I was driving a Ford Econovan truck loaded with equipment. And on this night, it was raining. It was the road was very slippery. I was driving at approximately 25 to 30 miles per hour. It was dark, and I was driving along the highway when I heard something fall in the back of my truck. And I turned the dome light on to see what it had fallen on the floor. But as I started to glance back, I noticed this light coming up behind me, an automobile, but it was coming very rapidly. So I watched the road till the car got past me, and again I turned to look at the back of the truck. But as I did, I noticed this other object, no light, but the object was coming up the side of my truck. I thought it was a car at first, then as I glanced at it, there was no lights on it. It was not touching the highway. And I looked directly at it. The object was approximately level with the window and my cab.
Like hovering.
Yeah, but keeping right with me. And then it gradually pulled ahead of me, about, I'd say, 30 to 50 feet ahead of me. It turned crosswise the road, but still moving ahead of me. But it started slowing down. As it slowed down, of course, I had to keep braking my truck till it stopped completely. I stopped maybe 10, 12, 15 feet from the vehicle. As I did stop, there was a door open directly in front of my headlights, and a man stepped out on the highway and started toward my truck. I had the motor running in my truck. The windows were closed. When this man was approximately halfway between my truck and his vehicle, I distinctly either heard or felt this voice, or whatever you want to call it, asked me to roll the window down on the passenger side of my truck. I don't know yet why I did it, but I slid over in the middle of the cab. I rolled the window down, and this man walked up to me. He had his arms folded like this. He had a slight smile on his face, but his lips were closed. But as he walked up to the truck, again, I think I felt the communication. Please do not be frightened. I will not harm you. I only want to talk to you.
You're not necessarily hearing this. It's like you're sort of just aware that this is the message that's coming through to you from this figure.
Correct. I cannot explain exactly the feeling. I knew what the man was saying or what I was feeling, hearing, without audible communication. And he asked me what my name was. I tried to tell him, but this time I honestly couldn't speak. But I was thinking my name, and some way he knew what my name was. He spoke my name, and then he said, "My name is Cold, Cold."
C-O-L-D.
C-O-L-D. And he repeatedly asked me not to be frightened, but he only wanted to talk to me. He asked me very simple questions like where I was from, what I was doing, if I worked for a living, if I had to work for a living. He only asked me questions that anybody could have answered. As soon as this man had got out there and walked toward my truck, the vehicle itself lifted straight up in the air. And it was still in my headlights, or I could still see it, about 50 feet high, I would expect. There was cars and trucks traveling the highway. There was a car, an automobile, with the woman I later found out, and her three children in the car stopped about 100 feet ahead of my truck and sit there and watched. There were several people, saw the vehicle, saw the man standing by my truck. And the man only talked to me just a very short while. Then, as he said, "Mr. Derenberger, I will see you again shortly." He turned, and the vehicle itself came back down again beside my truck. This man, Mr. Cole, walked directly to the door. I seen the door open again, and a man standing in the door. Mr. Cole walked over, got into the vehicle, and again went straight up.
Mr. Cole, he looks like a person, like a human being on our earth.
If Mr. Cole would walk right here in with us now, there would be no way to identify him unless you knew exactly what to look for.
Right, I see. But the extraordinary thing was the communication that he did with you, which involved no speaking.
No speaking at all. There was no audible sound at all.
Well, then he got back on the vehicle, whatever it was, and went away.
Straight up.
Okay. Now, then what happened? Well, what did you do?
As soon as he left, of course, I left much more rapidly than he did because the vehicle itself didn't go fast. But I went straight home, and when I went in the back door, my wife knew immediately something had happened to me. She said later that I was very white, and she asked me what had happened, if I'd hit somebody, had a wreck. I told her no, and then I sent the children to bed, and over a cup of coffee, I told my wife everything had happened. She suggested we call the police. I told her she wanted to call the police to go ahead, and she did. As soon as she told the police what had happened, they asked her to hang the phone up, and they would call her back shortly. In approximately 5 to 10 minutes, they did call her back and ask her what kind of a condition I was in, if I was nervous, frightened, sick, or how I was acting. She told them that I was still nervous, but was calming down. They asked my wife to tell me not to worry, that I had been the third man on that highway that night that had been stopped by this vehicle and talked to. The two other people I later found out by Mr. John Keel, that they were truck drivers from Bellevue, West Virginia. They had stopped, but when they reported this, they asked that their names not be released. I know the men personally since that time, and they are afraid of the publicity in their positions. They don't want it known.
Was their experience with Mr. Cold and this vehicle just like yours?
Yes.
In other words, they came over to... Did they relate the same kind of story about the communication that they communicated with you, or with them, rather than the same way they communicated with you?
Yes, they did. They said that they seen the man's mouth move, not at all. They never heard him speak any words at all audibly, yet they, this
knew
Mr. Cole, asked their name, where they lived, what they were doing. And the strange thing, he asked each and every one of us if we worked for a living, or if we had to work for a living.
Now he is apparently sorting out individuals. He's looking for somebody to take on to take someplace. Now, what happened next? I mean, when did you next have a contact with Mr. Cole?
The second contact that I had with Mr. Cole, I didn't see him at all. I had another salesman in the truck, the same truck with me, driving along a different highway, and I heard this voice or felt this communication, and at this time he asked me to keep control of myself, that he was actually speaking to me, not to be frightened, but he wanted to tell me a few things about himself. At this time, he told me his full name was Ingrid Cole, that he was married, had a wife, Kemma, had two children, and said that the world that he was from was called Lanulus. Lanulus. And he told me that their world was similar to ours, very much like ours, that the people in all of their history of their time, known time, there had never been a war of any kind or any trouble on their world between the people. He told me that there was different colored people on his planet, but it was caused by either what they ate or the climate in which they lived, that they were all Lanulusian people. They were different color, but still the same people. And he told me at this time, he said, we will meet with you personally, physically, and talk to you later. At this time, he said, we will meet with you later and talk to you. He asked me not to be frightened again. He said, when I break contact with you, you will feel a distinct shock, but there can be no harm come to you. And I did. It felt like something snapped close to your ear, and it was gone.
You want to have you tell us the story about this next contact and where you went from there and what's happened since.
All right, I'd be glad to
tell you. We're talking with Woody Derenberger about a trip that he made to Lanulus. Woody Derenberger's with us this morning, and we're talking about a trip he made on a UFO. And also with us is Harold Hubbard, who with Woody put together this book called Visitors from Lanulus. And when we left off just a moment ago, we had come to the point where you were getting the second contact from Mr. Cold, who was this humanoid figure who came out of this this vehicle that stopped you on that road near Mineral Wells.
I don't exactly like to hear him referred to as a humanoid figure, because if you call him a humanoid, you have to call us a humanoid too, because
he is as human as
we are.
Mm-hmm.
There is a slight difference in their blood. But as I say, they're 100% human. They're 100% the same as we are. For an example, they say that their religious beliefs are identical with ours, except they believe there is one God that created everything, and they have no different denomination. But they believe in the same God we do. They worship God the same as we do, and they are more religious, actually, than what we are. They contribute all of their knowledge, their learning, their gaining, directly from God himself.
Now, you learned this from them after you made the second contact,
right,
and went with them. Well, tell us how that came about, Woody.
Well, about 2 weeks after my first encounter with this Mr. Cold, I came home one night approximately at 11 or 12 o'clock at night. As I drove up into my yard, I seen two men sitting on the porch, and when I got out of my truck and walked up, Mr. Cold, both the men got to their feet, they shook hands with me, and this time they were talking, just like we're talking now. And we sit on the porch. I asked them to go in. They said they didn't want to frighten my wife or children, but we sit on the porch at zero weather for approximately 1.5 to 2 hours and talk. At this time, they asked me all about our way of life, how we live, why we had our troubles here, and how we handled them. Of course, I couldn't explain why we had so much trouble, but at this time, he told me that, again, that on their world, they had none of this trouble, but they say that it was because they can communicate with each other so much better than what we can. Because they use their mental telepathy, it's not a spoken word like we have to explain our every feeling and action to our friends, but they can simply open their mind and let everyone around them know how they feel. They also told me that this is something that each and every one of us here on this world can also learn if we want, that it's inherent in every man, woman, and child, this method of communication. And he talked to me this way for, as I say, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then asked me if I wanted to see their ship. Now, I had a large barn that set out approximately 100 yards from my home. We got up and walked out behind this barn, and the ship was sitting there. Now, this ship, the only way that I can describe it, if you have ever seen an old-fashioned lamp chimney, globe, they call them.
You mean shaped like this? One of those kind of arrangements like this?
That's right. That's a very good description of it. But it looked as though there were two of those together, but it was flat on the bottom part of it. But they asked me if I wanted to get on the ship at this time, and I refused to get on it. I was frankly frightened to get on it. But I asked him how fast they could move this ship if they wanted to, and he asked me to watch them. He bid me goodbye, told me he would meet me again, and that both men got on the ship. They closed the door, and one instant it was sitting there. The next instant there was just a faint, like a spark, just blew into the sky, and it disappeared completely. And he later told me that they had complete control of gravity, the reason that they could move so fast. But Mr. Cole did come back. I don't think we'll have time to go into the full story, but he did come back several times after this. And on one of these meetings, coming from Ravenswood, West Virginia, he asked me if I wanted to go for a trip. I told him yes. He told me where to drive to meet the ship. I did drive. I did get on the ship. And at the first time that I got on the ship, he took me on a trip from this earth in one type of a vehicle, straight up, to someplace close to the vicinity of the moon. Then we transferred into what they call the Starship of Lang. And that's what the people of this Earth are referring to now as the mothership. The smaller craft that I was in went directly up and underneath of this craft and locked into position directly under it. There was a hatch open downward, one upward, and we went into the mothership. I met the whole crew and several hundred people that was on this craft. And they took me within approximately 50 to 100 feet of the surface of the moon. If you have read or seen me on television before, you'll find out that I did describe what the astronauts would find on the moon before they ever got there, and it turned out exactly as I said it would. But I did see the moon. Then they took me to their world that they call Lemnos. At no time was I permitted to land on this first trip. They took me close to the surface of their world so I could see people, I could see their buildings, I could see vehicles, but I wasn't permitted to land. They told me that I wasn't prepared to land, that I would have to be what I would call sanitized and inoculated and everything before land, but eventually I would be able to land on their world. They brought me back home, and that was about all there was to that trip.
How long did it take? Like, could you keep track of it in terms of arc time? Like, how many days?
I would say on that first trip, it was no more. At the very greatest, I didn't look at my watch. I never thought of it. But I would say it couldn't have been over 2 hours at the very latest that I was going on the whole trip.
That means that you're leaping over time in an extraordinary, a way that transcends our grasp of what time is.
They say that they don't move in the speed, in the way that we move. Instead of, we travel so many miles per hour.
Yeah.
But instead of this, they bend distance. They do not bend time, they bend distance, space itself. Like if you take a string, this end and this end, and bend them directly together. If you would fit the switch, the end just comes together, and you're at that spot. As strange as it seems, hard as it is to believe, these people told me that our government, our own government here on this Earth, could travel at any speed, far greater than the speed of light right now. They have the means, they have the ways, if they could control the gravity itself that would keep from crushing or disintegrating the objects in which our government would move. They have the ways to move it, but they cannot control it. These people do have the way to control it.
Well, Woody, we haven't really gotten to the point where you actually went there and landed and talk to people on Lanulus. But when we take this pause, can we come back and tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll take some phone calls from some of our viewers out there.
Certainly.
And find out something about how you got the idea of putting the book together, Mr. Hubbard. We're talking with Woody Derenberger about his trip to Lanulus. And we'll be back with him after a Who's That contest, and Rose, who has the news. We're talking with Woody Derenberger about visitors from Lanulus. And also with us today is Harold Hubbard, who with Woody put together this book called Visitors from Lanulus. And he's been telling us the story of how this all happened. And we've come to the point where you've already been taken on their craft to Lanulus. You've seen it, but you have not landed. Now, did they take you there and let you stay for a while?
Yes, shortly after that first trip. I cannot remember the exact length of time between it, but I was taken to their world, and before I landed, I was stripped. I was given some kind of an injection in each arm. I was taken into what I would call a little shower stall and was sanitized. That's what they called it. And then I was landed. When I got off of the spacecraft itself, I was taken by Ingrid Cold and his wife to their home, where I met their family, shown around their home. I seen the way they done their cooking.
Was it like us? You know, they have stoves and pots and pans?
No, it's not exactly like that, although they do cook in the same way we do, but their stove looked like just a piece of metal. And on top of the stove, there was no burner or places to set the cooking utensils. You could sit at any place at all you desired on top of the stove and control that heat. And it was controlled by atomic heat. Their whole heating system is atomic. And they say that the atomic also is becoming obsolete on their world. But the thing that impressed me most in their world was the strangest thing was their laundry facilities, the laundering facilities. They took me in this room about, I'd say, 12 by 12, and it was from the ceiling where hooks, hangers of every description to hang your clothes on. You simply, when you wanted to clean your clothes, you hang your clothes on these hooks. You go out, close the door, press the switch, and a few minutes later, you go in, your clothes are clean, sanitized, ready to wear. Just that way, you can clean any amount of clothing at the same time. I still don't know why this impressed me so much, but I remember that more than anything else that I've seen on their world.
And their family, are they talking a language that you could understand?
When I was with them, they mostly talked language like we're talking now, but although I can understand them now, when I'm with them, I can understand their mental telepathy, communicate with them with mental telepathy just as easily as I can talk.
But they have a language that is different from ours.
Yes, they do. They have a language. A few words that I know in it would be, to say goodbye, would be adia adidikapu. That would be goodbye or God go with you.
Mm-hmm. And, well, we want to take some telephone calls, but I'd like to ask Mr. Hubbard how he happened to get together with you to put this thing together, to get this book, this story down in paper like this. When did you first hear about this?
Back about this time, a year or two later than, of course, the 66.
That's when you made the first encounter.
Yes. I had met Woody through an investigations committee where we were investigating the incident, and, of course, we were quite interested. We met Mr. Durenberger, and we had talked to some lengths, of course, and I decided then, after talking to Woody, that I wouldn't even write the story. Because, you see, I had to have some proof, something that I knew would be nothing left like a fallacy, because I was going to write a story that I had to believe in. So, of course, talking with Woody and seeing a few things that he does not talk about, I then became very interested and then proceeded to write the book.
Well, Woody, you know, somebody might say, oh, you just, you know, it's all a big story, it's all they put on, you made this up to sell a book and so on. But you just don't seem like the kind of a guy who would sit around and spin out a story like this out of whole cloth. You just don't strike me as that sort of a fellow.
Well, I certainly...
I'm sure you get that all the time, right?
I do get this. I'm accused of being in this for making money, but as strange as it seems, even though we have the book out, and it's been out for approximately a year, maybe a little longer, I have never made a cent from this book. I have never received one dime for this book. In any way, I've never made any money. I've never even made the expenses that I've traveled around to talk to people. I simply would like to tell the people this because I know that these people are going to land. They're going to be with our people, mingle with our people, and I simply want to tell our people what's going to happen so they won't be frightened, but these people will be permitted to land.
Woody, let's take some phone calls. A lot of people out there want to ask you some questions. Let's take one here right now. Go ahead, please.